All right, every Thursday at this time, we take the spotlight off of Tubbs and we put it right on the sports editor of the Argus Leader, because we want to know what's on his mind. It is Stu's Views with Stu Whitney.
Thank you, Craig.
Oops, hold on there. Okay.
Thank you, Craig and Chris, for a very special edition of Stu's Views. And long before there was Purple Pride or Adrian Peterson or even the Metrodome in Minneapolis, there was the Great Purple Experiment in Sioux Falls. One of the strangest and most significant episodes in this city's sports history is a surefire trivia stumper. Question.
Moving to AAA in class 11-man football?
This is different. This involves where did the Minnesota Vikings play their first game as an NFL franchise? The answer, they lost to the Dallas Cowboys 38-13 in an exhibition contest before 4,954 fans at Howard Wood Field on August 5th, 1961. In addition to being a springboard for the Cowboys, who went 0-11-1 as an expansion team in 1960, the game marked the NFL debut of a rookie quarterback named Fran Tarkenton, who entered the action in the fourth quarter for the Vikings and commenced a Hall of Fame career. But most of the memories are focused off the field, where seat-of-the-pants planning led to poor attendance and a loss of almost $10,000 for the game's organizers. It was, as they say, a day that lives in infamy, the first and last time the NFL set foot on South Dakota soil. That game absolutely killed us for pro football, said the late Bob Burns, a Sioux Falls coaching legend who was the game's main organizer and promoter. Basically, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. Everything just turned into a big laugh. We were very proud of Howard Wood Field at the time, but the Vikings took one look at it and said, "Is this all you got?" That's when I knew we were in trouble. Like most irresistibly
expansion team. Come on.
What leverage
they shouldn't
they
be that picky.
1961.
Like most irresistibly off-the-wall ideas, this one took shape in a bar. Burns, who coached at Augustana from 1956 to 61, was having lunch with friends at a Minneapolis sports hangout called the 620 Club during a recruiting visit. The place was owned by Vikings president Mack Winter, who was desperately seeking a site for his expansion team's first preseason contest. The original plan was to play in the Twin Cities, and that had collapsed. And Burns heard Winter and his associates mention Fargo-Moorhead as a potential replacement.
Ugh.
As usual, the former prize fighter and World War II paratrooper couldn't help himself. He spoke up. "I told them Sioux Falls was bigger than Fargo-Moorhead, and they all laughed at me," recalled Burns. "I got mad because they didn't think we were big enough to handle it. I asked them, how much money would we need to get this game? When they told me $40,000, I said, I'll call you tonight."
$40,000 in 1961?
They thought I was crazy.
That's almost $40,000.
That's serious coin.
Yes.
But Burns was quite serious, and his ability to get things done quickly was well known among his prominent friends in Sioux Falls. On the same day he spoke with Winter, Burns got on the phone with local big shooters and convinced them to put up $5,000 apiece to bring the game to Sioux Falls. In about 5 hours, he had the $40,000 he needed. "I had all the gamblers in town involved, along with car dealers and anybody else with money," Burns says. To this day, they complain they didn't get anything back. But I called up to Minneapolis that night and said, "I've got your money in the First National Bank." The Winter and those guys couldn't believe it. I said, "Do you believe me now? Let's stop talking and get ready to go."
I can see Bob doing that.
That was Burns.
Yep.
One of the investors was Ozzie Schock, who accompanied Burns back to Minneapolis for a press conference announcing Sioux Falls as the site of the Vikings' first game. "At that time, we thought we'd make a ton of dough," recalled Schock. "It was a lot of fun putting it together, even though we didn't really sell it well. We just sort of figured people would flock right in. But this was August and the weather was too hot. And of course, nobody knew very much about the NFL in those days. That became a problem when the Vikings, coached by Norm Van Brocklin, arrived to prepare for the game. They were the home team," said Burns, "but they tried to shift everything over to us. Van Brocklin was complaining like heck, saying the grass was too long and that they'd be better off playing the game in Waseca. I told him we had to split the locker room building to fit both teams, but he shook his head and said the Vikings need the whole thing. So I asked him where the Cowboys would dress, and he screamed, to heck with them. Let them dress downtown at their hotel. That's exactly what happened. Coach Tom Landry and his team, which included quarterbacks Eddie LeBaron and young Don Meredith, got off the plane and soon discovered that their locker room was the Cataract Hotel. Landry was madder than hell, but what could he do?" said Burns. "I told him that the Vikings were in charge of things like that. All they wanted to do was break even at that point." Despite the locker room conflict, longtime Vikings trainer Fred Zamberletti defends Sioux Falls, with a population of less than 60,000 in 1961, as a sensible site for an NFL preseason game of that era. "You've got to remember that we're talking about the original days of the league," he said. "It wasn't until later that we played all our exhibition games in NFL cities."
That's right.
"We played in front of about 10,000 people in Atlanta in 1964. We played games in Tulsa and Shreveport. When we got to Legion Field in Birmingham, we hung our clothes on nails in the locker room. Compared to the small town I come from in Iowa, Sioux Falls was like a metropolis. And one thing I remember about the field was that it was immaculately clean. We couldn't really complain. Blackie Sherrod, a well-known Texas sports writer and columnist for the Dallas Morning News, never forgot the first time he laid his eyes on Bob Burns. One of the Cowboy business guys had been in Sioux Falls for a week, and he told me, there's someone you have to meet. He's in charge of this game, and he's the funniest son of a gun you've ever seen.
I don't think he used son of a gun.
No, he didn't. The main thing I remember was that Burns was one of the all-time great characters, running around and trying to take care of all these little details. I don't think I even wrote anything about the game. I just wrote about Burns. In a memorable column that was included in one of his books, Sherrod described the colorful coach as a husky Irishman in his 30s with a voice that sounds as if somebody regularly raps on it with raps on his Adam's apple with a six iron. Sherrod relates a story of when Cowboys publicist Larry Carl asked Burns about what kind of food would be served in the press box. Food for them bums, roared Burns. Oh, I beg your pardon. What kind of dressing do you want on that salad? French, Roquefort, or Thousand Island? Why should I feed those guys? I'm worried about feeding my kids at home. Burns displays a proud smile when reminded of those words, and the stories keep pouring forth. They also wanted 200 soft lead pencils and 40 typewriters in the press box, Burns recalled. I told them, we even got 40 typewriters in the state of South Dakota. The whole thing was a comedy. We couldn't spend any more money, but they kept on asking for things. When a team official told Burns that protected padding was required on the goalpost in the end zone, he couldn't believe his ears. Padding, Burns screamed, as related in Sherrod's column. You're pros, aren't you? Folks expect you to see you bend them. I ran at him a couple times myself, and it didn't hurt me.
Oh, man, that's Burnsy.
Grandstand seats for the game were priced at $5.50, and Burns borrowed bleachers from local colleges to offer a cheaper ticket for $3.50. The 3,000 bleacher seats off the end zone decreased Hardwood Field's capacity to about 16,500. But even with heavy publicity, ticket sales were sluggish. The price were very reasonable for NFL preseason games at that time, but people in Sioux Falls thought they were too high, recalls former Argus Era sports editor John Egan. They figured it was too much to pay for a game that didn't count. Burns managed to appear high-spirited during a formal reception for the teams at Westward Ho, but panic was setting in. He accused Minneapolis Star Tribune columnist Sid Hartman of scaring off Twin Cities fans with negative reports. He was against it from the beginning, and he wrote some terrible articles, recalled Burns. All he talked about was how the Vikings were going down to the farm and how Sioux Falls didn't have a decent place to play.
Well, thanks a lot, Sid. Bastard.
That's Sid.
On a scorching Saturday that reached 92 degrees, the game was set to begin at 8:30 p.m., but Burns knew there was a problem long before kickoff. I drove by the field, and there were all these people on the front of the box office with hands full of tickets trying to get rid of them, he said. We figured we had to sell about 10,000 seats to break even, but we didn't even come close. I couldn't believe people wouldn't support it. When the game started, they kept saying, Bob Burns, please report to the box office. But I stayed away as much as I could.
Oh.
It took less than 4 minutes for the Vikings to make history in that game. They allowed their first ever touchdown when Dallas recovered a fumble by Mel Triplett and scored on a 15-yard run. Landry's team increased its lead to 14-0 when LeBaron found wingback Frank Clark for a 23-yard touch pass on the opening play of the second quarter. But as the Cowboys chased the second win in team history, Zamberletti stood on the opposite sideline in a trance. He couldn't stop looking at the empty seats. I don't know how many people that stadium held, but it had room for a hell of a lot more, recalls the veteran trainer. They stayed away from us like the bubonic plague. My immediate impression was that Bob Burns was a much better football coach than he was a football promoter. The Vikings' first touchdown came when Shaw capped an 80-yard drive by hitting McElhaney for a 14-yard strike in the second quarter. But Meredith, an All-American out of SMU, replaced LeBaron and led Dallas to another score to make the halftime 21-6. The Cowboys added a field goal in the third quarter and a touchdown pass from Meredith to put the Vikings behind 31-6.
Turn out the lights.
Yeah.
With Dan
literally in this case.
Sounds like your 2013 Vikings.
Van Brocklin's expansion team, which lost three fumbles, failed to muster more motivation than the event itself had inspired. Though the small crowd favored the Vikings, there would be no miracle comeback. There was just no energy coming out of the stands, recalled Zamberletti, and the teams weren't good enough to draw any. No one saw it as a major moment when the 21-year-old Tarkenton, fresh out of the University of Georgia, entered the game in the fourth quarter and threw a 36-yard scoring strike to Don Ellersick with 5 minutes remaining. Of course, said former Argus Leader sports editor Craig Stoltz, none of us realized how great of an NFL career he would go on to have. About a month later, Tarkenton replaced Shaw and led the Vikings to a season-opening 37-13 upset of the mighty Chicago Bears at Metropolitan Stadium. The Scrambler led Minnesota to 3 Super Bowl appearances and retired as the NFL's all-time passing yards leader with 47,003. Yep. All of it started on a steamy August night on the Howard Woodfield turf. In the moments that followed the Cowboys' triumph, Blackie Sherrod strolled over to Burns and asked him how much money Sioux Falls organizer had lost on the event. "Hell, we'll lose about $5,000," said Burns, who later discovered that was a very conservative estimate.
Uh-huh.
"But when I put back the $3,000 I stole, it won't be too bad." "The only thing that bothers me is those darn bleachers. I got my wife out there taking them down. I gave her a head start because she's a slow worker." Despite this comedy of errors, history has been more kind to the Great Purple Experiment than even Burns would have people believe. If the Vikings hold court in a grand hall of tradition, Sioux Falls has reserved itself a quirky corner. No amount of financial fumbling or big city superiority can ever take it away. "I really don't think people saw it as some sort of national disaster," said Stoltz. "I think those people who showed up were thrilled as the dickens to see players of that caliber competing in Sioux Falls. In retrospect, it was a big-time game in a small-town environment, and you'll probably never see the likes of it again."
Wow.
That is Stu's view.
Very good.
August 14th, 2014.
Very, very good.